This month of June, as we've just kind of wrapped up our study of Hebrews, this is our meeting month, I guess you would call it. We'll have Nathan Batty will be here the last two Sundays of the month. I guess that would be the 19th and the 26th, or the 19th through the 26th. And so typically when we have the preacher come in, this becomes an open month. So I had to think, what do I want to talk about? So I went to the one person I knew would have an opinion. My daughter. And I asked Erin, give me something to talk about. And off the top of her head, she said, daughters. Well, that's an interesting concept. But I got to thinking about the word daughter. And so here's the lesson that I've prepared. I've entitled it, Daughter and Talitha. Well, this comes from Mark, the 5th chapter. And so actually, it's going to be a little bit of a story lesson. I haven't done a story lesson in a long time. But this is actually, it's two stories intertwined together. So if you want to turn to Mark, the 5th chapter, that's where we're going to spend most of our time. I'll have the verses up here, but I just want to tell you a story. And it's about a couple people and a couple families that are really going through some difficult times in a lesson I've entitled, Daughter and Talitha. So we're going to get in Mark, the 5th chapter, the 21st verse. It says, now when Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side, a great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. So if you see something highlighted in red, that's something I want to talk about. If you see something in italics, it may be that I'm combining some versions. This story is told in Matthew, it's told in Mark, and it's told in Luke. So if you see something that's in just italicized, I'm taking it from one of the other places where it's found and just kind of putting it together. But I want to talk about this great multitude. So Jesus has been doing some great works. And he's been hanging around the Sea of Galilee. So I got a little picture here for you. He's been hanging up here in Capernaum. And that is where a lot of the activity is. And then he's been going across the Sea of Galilee to this region of the Gadarenes. And so he's been doing work up in Capernaum. And there's always a crowd of people around him because they're getting pretty excited about what Jesus is doing, all these great works that he can do. Well, he gets on a boat. He goes across. This is where he comes across this man that is been overtaken by a bunch of demon spirits. They call him Legion. And he's able to chase the demons out. And they go into a group of pigs. And the herd of swine goes off the cliff. And they tell Jesus, yeah, you probably need to leave. And so he goes back across the lake. And by the time he gets back to Capernaum, there's people there waiting. Well, Capernaum was the hometown of a fellow by the name of Matthew. And Matthew was the guy who wrote the first gospel. Matthew was a tax collector. And so he had his little booth set up right there by the harbor. And every time people came in, Matthew hit them with taxes. So that's kind of what he liked to do. I got to deal with the Tongan County tax assessor this week. I don't think anybody is real fond of tax collectors. Well, they certainly weren't fond of Matthew. So Matthew's up here in Capernaum, and I found this picture. I thought it was a pretty good picture. This is Matthew, I guess, over here in this little tax collecting booth. You can see an inscription there to the Roman leader, to the Caesar, because that's where all that money's going. And you kind of see in the back, there's all the ships coming in the harbor. And as soon as they walked in, Matthew got them. And so Matthew got their taxes. Well, Jesus goes up, and he's talking to Matthew, and he ends up going to Matthew's house. And Jesus, you don't believe what he did. He sat down and ate with a bunch of tax collectors and sinners and publicans. And the Jews were just amazed at what had happened here. That Jesus, he's eating with tax collectors. I don't know that I wanted to eat with my tax collector the other day. Because they do. They're irritating. And they feel like you're taking money from you and they're stealing from you. And they're not being fair and on and on and on. But Jesus went to Matthew's house and they had dinner together. I don't know if they were still in Matthew's house. I'm not sure. But something interesting really happens. It says, and behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name. And when he saw him, he fell at his feet. He fell at his feet and worshipped him. That's what Matthew says. Matthew says he worshipped him. Now, I don't really know how you pronounce that name. I'm going to call him Jairus. Because a couple years ago when I was teaching, I had two twins. And it was Jared and Jairus. And if that's how he pronounced it, then that's how I'm going to pronounce it. I don't know if that's the technical Middle Eastern way of pronouncing it, but I'm going to call him Jairus. So Jairus came and it says he is one of the rulers of the synagogue. So he is a big deal in the city of Capernaum. And I don't know if he actually came to Matthew's house where Jesus has already left the house, but whatever the case, there is a great multitude of people around. There's a whole bunch of people very, very interested to see what Jesus has to say. And it says Jairus comes and he falls at his feet and he starts to worship him because Jairus has a serious problem. And my heart just breaks for Jairus. It says he begged him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her that she may be healed and that she will live." I don't know if there's anything sadder than a child to the point of death and a parent having to bury their own child. I can't think of much worse. I think about those kids and those parents in Uvalde where that crazy guy went and shot a bunch of kids. Could you imagine having to get that phone call if you're the parent? I think about our little friend Malia Plummer and seeing what her family has done, fighting like crazy to make sure that that girl can survive. And luckily, she is just doing so well. But I also think about our little friend Hadley Hollick. And Hadley died several years ago. I think she's about 2 years old, had a pediatric cancer, did all they could to try to save the girl, and she just didn't make it. And so I think about these kids, and I think about these parents, and is there anything worse as a parent than seeing your child reach to the point of death? But that's where we are. Luke goes on and kind of clarifies, tells us this little girl is 12 years old, and not only is she the daughter of Jairus, she's the only daughter of Jairus. And so it's just a very, very, very sad situation. Matthew's account, it almost makes it sound like she's already died. But I think what the point is, she's taking her last breath. And so it's a very, very sad situation. So Jairus is running, trying to find Jesus. I'm sure he didn't walk. I'm sure he ran to find Jesus. He fights through this great multitude of people. He sees Jesus and he falls down at his feet and he worships him. And says, "Jesus, you have to help me. Please come lay your hands on my little baby so that she will survive." And Jesus agrees. So Jesus went with it. And a great multitude followed him and thronged him. Now that word thronged, I believe it's Luke that says they pressed against. So we got a great deal of people walking around. And so when it says they followed Jesus, I'm seeing the crowd kind of being behind Jesus. I'm seeing Jairus leading the way. I'm seeing Jesus behind him, and I'm seeing the crowd of people thronging and start to press him. But as they do, they kind of start encircling him. A couple weeks ago, Drew and Jake and I, we got to go watch the Texas Rangers play. And they built a brand new ballpark up there. Really pretty. One thing I didn't like about it, though. The old ballpark is still there. They built another ballpark over here on the side, and in between it is nothing but restaurants and entertainment venues. And obviously they want, when you go to a game, they want you to come back and go to the entertainment district. And so when you leave that ballpark, I don't care what side you're, they just kind of like filter you around, and everybody exits out the same way. So you're talking about 30, 40,000 people walking. I guess we split them in half, so 20,000 people walking each direction to get to the exits to head out to this entertainment district. You want to talk about being thronged. I mean, as wide as this building, as far as you can see, imagine this just being packed and being able to walk like this. This is about all you can walk. Shuffling in that crowd, you are thronged. There's people bumping into you. There's little kids running around. I didn't really like that. I think that's what it means when it says he was thronged. He was pressed against. There's just people everywhere. Now, there probably weren't 20,000. But there was enough to make a difference to what the Bible says was a great multitude. I found a couple pictures of Capernaum. It's not a real big town. They've kind of found the ruins of it right there on the Sea of Galilee. Some fellow I read said probably about 1,500 people. Now, I think they packed in a little tighter than what we do today. 1,500, that's probably about the size of Eden. Think about a little six-man school, maybe Eden, Garden City, Sterling City. It wouldn't take that long to walk across that town. It was kind of packed in here. But this right here, these are the ruins of the old synagogue. That's where Jairus was one of the rulers. I'm guessing this is this. Looks the same to me, but that's where Jairus worked. He was one of the leaders or the rulers of the synagogue. So wherever they are in Capernaum, I don't know. But he is found, he's fallen down at the feet of Jesus, and he said, Jesus, you got to help me. We got to get back to my house stat, because my daughter, my little baby, is about to die. And the crowds will start pushing, throwing. I don't know if it was 20 people, 100 people, 1,000 people, I don't know. But there's a great multitude begins pushing against Jesus and Jairus. And all of a sudden, it kind of comes to a standstill. And now we're going to be introduced to our second story. It said, and a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years and had suffered many things from many physicians. She had spent all that she had and she was no better, but rather grew worse. So all of a sudden, somewhere in this crowd comes this woman. We don't know her name, but it says she has a flow of blood, a hemorrhage. I don't know what that means, but she has had it for 12 years. She's gone to every doctor in town trying to get some relief, and it's only made things worse. And the way I read it, it's almost like the doctors are kind of taking advantage of her. And so they've taken every dime that this woman has to try to fix this flow of blood. I don't know what that means. Does that mean her blood wasn't able to clot and that she was always just bleeding? You see, a hemophilia, that's what we call it today, where your blood doesn't clot, you're always bleeding. Well, she had nosebleeds. You know, a lot of kids have those, especially when it gets into like football season when it's very dry and it's just the humidity. We'll have kids it's every day. They just have these terrible nosebleeds. She's severe anemic. Is it like a female bleeding? Is it like a menstruation? It's just not stopping. I don't know. I don't know what the flow of blood is, but I know that she's had it for 12 years. She's done everything she can to try to make it better, but it's only gotten worse. Now, this is probably a bigger deal back then than it would be now, because she's under the law of Moses, right? Here's the law. This is from Leviticus chapter 15. It says, if a woman has a discharge of blood for many days, other than at the time of her customary impurity, or if it runs beyond her usual time of impurity, all the days of her unclean discharge shall be as the days of her customary impurity. She shall be unclean. Every bed on which she lies all the days of her discharge shall be to her as the bed of her unclean. And whatever she sits on shall be unclean, as the uncleanness of her impurity. Whoever touches these things shall be unclean. He shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. So whatever the case was, I don't know what caused the flow of blood, but this woman is unclean. Anything she wears is unclean. Anything she sits on is unclean. Anyone who comes to help her is unclean. What a life. I mean, she is a social outcast. Right? She's not getting invited to any parties. She's not getting to go anywhere because no one wants to be around this unclean woman. She can't go to the temple and worship because she would be ceremonially unclean. She can't go anywhere because she is ceremonially unclean. She starts bleeding. She gets it on the clothes. Nowadays, I tell you, those kids that have nosebleeds, they get blood all over their shirt. You know what they do? They go call mom, and mom brings them another shirt. Well, she probably didn't have any of the clothes. This woman has absolutely no money. She spent every dime she had to try to fix this problem. She has nothing. About the closest thing I can give it to in the Bible, it's like a leper. You know, we talk about lepers being stuck by themselves and having to live by themselves and being socially isolated. This woman is socially isolated too. And it has been like this for 12 years. She is a complete and total social outcast. How sad is that? But she heard about Jesus. And she's part of that crowd. So she's got an idea. She came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. I think about that for a little bit. I bet this woman enjoyed days like this, right? Because when she got stuck in the crowd, she could hide. Right? She didn't have to worry about anything. She could hide. She could be stuck in a couple hundred people and nobody would notice her. Now, if there was nobody there and she came out, everybody would go, oh, there's that unclean woman. There's that unclean woman that has an issue of blood. So she's got to time this up pretty well. She hears about Jesus. Here's my chance. There's a great multitude of people surrounding Jesus. Everybody's pressing up against him. Nobody knows who's who. So I'm going to sneak up and I'm going to touch the hem of his garment. I'm just going to touch his clothes. I'm going to touch his robe. And then that way, I'll be healed. Pretty good idea, right? So what we're going to start seeing now between these two stories is like a contrast. So here's the first one, notice. Here's Jairus. He's the big shot. He is one of the big wheels in town. He is a big deal. He fell down at the feet of Jesus in front of a crowd in a very public way. Then you've got the woman. We don't know her name. I just called her the outcast. She quietly comes from behind Jesus to touch his robe or his garment and then drift back into the crowd, thinking she will never, ever be noticed. So Jairus, everybody sees him worship. This woman wants to sneak up behind him, and nobody will know the difference. So she does. She sneaks up. She filters into that crowd. Nobody knows who she is or where she is. Next thing you know, she comes up to Jesus and she touches the hem of his clothes. And immediately it says, the fountain of her blood was dried up and felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. For the first time in 12 years, this woman feels right. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself the power had gone out of him, turned into the crowd and said, who touched my clothes? This lady thought she had it all figured out, right? Thought she had it all figured out. She snuck in. She touched the clothes. She snuck back out into the crowd, hiding right there in plain sight, thinking she's got away with it. And Jesus says, who touched my clothes? Well, the disciples, that's kind of a sarcastic reply, I think. But his disciples said, Jesus, you do see all these crowd people. You do see this multitude that has encircled you and has pressed against you and thronged against you. And you're said, who touched me? What do you think? I mean, I don't know. There's hundreds, thousands of people here. I don't know who touched you. I'm sure lots of people touched you. I'm sure lots of people brushed by him. I wonder how many people were sitting in that crowd going, I'm sorry, I think I did. I bumped into you a minute ago, Jesus. I'm sorry. But there's something more to it. He knows there's something more to it. His disciples are like, really? Who touched you? That's the question you're going to ask. It says, verse 32, I'm guessing I can visualize now. Jesus stops. And it says, he looks around to see who had done it. But he's just scanning the crowd, waiting for somebody to admit that they had touched him. And I'm pretty sure he locked eyes with that woman because she is just shaking out of fear. She knows that she's been caught. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction. So this goes back to what Aaron had to say. Oh, got ahead of one verse there. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter. This is the only time I could find that daughter is used as a name by Jesus. So I don't know what this lady's name was. But from here on out, I'm going to refer to her as daughter. That's the term of endearment that Jesus gave unto her. It's impressive. He says, you're going to be healed. Okay, you're going to be fine. Your faith has made you well. And so daughter now has the opportunity to give us insight. And she tells the whole thing. She tells the whole story. I'm sure she sat there in front of this crowd and gave the whole story about, well, for the last 12 years, this is what's happened. And I tried this doctor and this treatment, and I tried this doctor and this treatment, and I'm sure she's gone down the list. And I don't have any money because I've spent all my money on these doctors and just on and on. And then finally she says, I hear about Jesus. And I've gone and I've touched the hem, and now all of a sudden this flow, but instantly I felt it. Remember, because what she said was, Mark 5 and 28, for she said, if only I may touch his clothes, I shall be made well. Well, that was her plan. And so she's explaining. And I think it's kind of cool, here's another contrast, that we really get to see into the mind of daughter. We get to see what daughter's thinking and what she wants and what she's hoping for. But wait a minute. We got another story going on, right? We got another story going on. Wouldn't it be interesting If we are given access to the inner thoughts of Jairus, I bet Jairus is sitting over here with this, just a wreck, right? Because where are they going? They're supposed to be going back to Jairus' house because his daughter is about to die. We got to go. We got to, come on, Jesus, we got to go. Can we talk to this lady later? Come on, can we go? My daughter is about to die. You know, as parents, we could probably relate to this. Have you ever had a kid that when you're trying to get going somewhere and you need to be somewhere at a certain time, you need to leave, and that kid has a tendency to dawdle a little bit and make you late to work or late to church or late to school, wherever you're going? I won't tell you which of my kids this is. I don't want to embarrass them. But Megan and I had a plan. We said, this child only has one speed. The speed of annoying. That was the speed. If we needed the child to go fast, they went slow. Now, if we wanted the child to go slow, like you're at a zoo or somewhere, and you don't want them running around, you want them to stay close, boom, like a rocket was all over that park. Could not keep up with that child. We needed them to go fast to hurry up so we could go. That would be the time that we'd rearrange our closet, or we would pick up our clothes, or whatever. Had the speed of annoying. And it's just so frustrating when you're trying to get somewhere at a certain time. Let's go, let's go. So everybody probably has that feeling, right? Take it and multiply by about a million. Because that's what Jairus is feeling right now. Because Jairus, this is literally a situation of life or death. We've got to get to my daughter before she dies. And I can just see him over there thinking, Jesus, what are we doing? Can't we do this? Jesus, come on. Let's triage this a little bit. Let's prioritize. What's more important, this 12-year-old daughter who's about to die, or this lady that's had this blood issue? I'm sorry she's had a blood issue. I can almost hear Jerry saying, I'm sorry she's had a blood issue, but she's had it for 12 years. What's another 30 minutes? Right? Let's go take care of my daughter, and then we'll come back and deal with this. But that's not what Jesus did. Jesus did exactly what he did. He stopped. He talked to the woman. The woman gave her a story, told everything. Daughter's explaining what happened. And I'm going to see Jairus just going crazy. You know, I'm going to see him getting upset. I think about Martha. Remember Martha and Lazarus? So Lazarus was sick. So they sent to get Jesus. And it said, for whatever reason, Jesus stayed 2 more days where he was. And by the time he got there, Lazarus had died. And remember what Martha said to Jesus in one of the most passive-aggressive statements in the Bible? She goes, you know, Lord, if you would have been here, my brother wouldn't have died. I mean, that was a true statement of faith, but it was also kind of, I wish you had got here 2 days ago. And I think that's kind of what Jairus, if it was me, that's exactly what I'd be thinking. Jesus, let's go. We have to get to the house before my baby dies. But we don't know what Jairus was thinking. But then the worst possible thing as far as Jairus is concerned happens. It says, while Jesus was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? And it's over. Because we had to stop and talk to this woman with her issue of blood, Jesus did not get to Jairus' house in time, and the daughter has died. What's Jairus going to do? Is he going to continue taking Jesus to his house? Is he going to go his own way? Is he going to break down? It's probably louder than I would hit the ground. I mean, can you imagine that being told? Your only daughter, your 12-year-old little girl, she's dead. But Jesus hears it. It says as soon as Jesus hears it, he didn't give him much of an opportunity. He says to Jairus, the ruler of the synagogue, do not be afraid. Only believe. So Jairus has to make a choice. And again, I see this as kind of a contrast. I think this is pretty cool. You notice the two choices? We've got daughter. She was hiding in the crowd. And Jesus said, who touched me? So she had to make a choice, right? Do I stay hidden in the crowd? Or do I come to Jesus? And she chose to step up and go to Jesus. Well, now we're kind of reversing it with Jairus. Because he's already with Jesus. He's got Jesus' attention. And Jesus says, do not be afraid, only believe. So is he going to stay with Jesus? Or is he just going to filter into the crowd? And so Jairus has to make a decision. The daughter's dead. A lot of people would have said, well, I don't need you anymore. And would have just filtered into the darkness, never to be seen from again. But he had to make a choice. And he did make a choice. And he continued with Jesus to his house. So at this point, I see the story. Jesus is going to kind of change some of things up a little bit. This great throng, this great multitude, Jesus sends them away. Jesus sends them home. And it says he permitted no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. And we've also got Jairus with us. And I would assume we would have the servants who came to tell him that the child had died. That's it. The multitude, not even the apostles. Most of the apostles were not permitted to see what was going to happen next at the house of Jairus. So it says he gets to the house. And he saw a tumult. There's a great to-do going on at the house. Luke says there was flute players. And so that's kind of in reference to these Middle Eastern funerals. Very, very different from our culture. You know, our culture, we have a funeral. It's usually very quiet. It's very reserved. People speak in hushed tones. I mean, it's very respectful. Either that or we kind of go the opposite. Our culture has something we like to call celebrations of life, right? Where maybe it's a lot happier. And you try to remember the good times. Not in this culture. It is very loud. In fact, they will hire people that are professional mourners. And they will hire these flute players, or these minstrels. And they play the music, and they're wailing, and they're crying, and they're loud. And even today, if you ever see on TV some kind of an explosion or something over in the Middle East, if you ever see when they're bringing the bodies up, it's just very, very different. It is just wailing and crying and very, very loud. So Jesus comes up here, and he sees all this going on and hears all of it. And he says, why are we making such a commotion? He said, the child's not dead. The child's just sleeping. And I can just see, oh, Jairus. I mean, you know Jairus wants to believe. You know Jairus wants to have faith. But to be told, the child's not dead. The child is just sleeping. So I tell you what most of the people did. It says they ridiculed him. The people there ridiculed him. So Jesus kicks them out too. Now, he takes all the flute players and anybody that doesn't believe, he just sent them out. And it says that he took the father and the mother of the child and those that were with him. That's Peter, James, and John. And they entered where the child was lying. I don't know if this makes a difference. You know I'm a numbers guy. That puts 7 people in the room. I don't know if that's significant or not. But there's Peter, James, and John. There's Jesus. There's the little girl. The little girl's mama. And Jairus. So I don't know if there's significance to the fact that there's 7 people in the room. But anytime there's 7, I start picking up on that. And so Jesus walks in. He sees this little girl. He says he takes her by the hand. And he said to her, Talitha Kumi. That is Aramaic. Sometimes things in the Bible are written in Aramaic. Remember at the cross where it said that Eloi, Eloi, which is translated, my God, why have you forsaken me? Because that's Aramaic. That was not the normal language spoken of in that day. It was an older language. But sometimes you'll see in the Bible they will speak this Aramaic. And so even the Bible will have to translate it for us. He says, Talitha Kumi, which is translated, little girl, I say to you, arise. So he gives the little girl a name, Talitha. Talitha means little girl. And so that's even the name that is still used in the Hebrew language, now the Hebrew culture. Even son of a music singer, her name is Talitha, because Talitha means little girl. And it says, immediately the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age. And they were overcome with great amazement. And there's the intertwined stories of daughter and Talitha. So Jesus gives nicknames to both of these women. Daughter and Talitha. And that's something that Jesus didn't typically do. But for whatever reason, we see how these two stories kind of intertwine. And there's some differences and there's some compare and contrast. But two awesome, awesome little stories. So I want to leave you with a couple ideas here of daughter and Talitha. Number one, I want you to remember this. Make the right decision. You know, both of these folks had a decision to make. Jairus had a decision. Do I keep on walking with Jesus or do I just go back into the crowd? And daughter had a choice to make. When Jesus called him out, who touched me? She could have just hidden in the crowd. So they both had a decision to make. Not only that, they both had a decision to make to go to Jesus in the first place. And I think about daughter being, you know, for 12 years, being unable to be a part of the congregation. She was unclean. And she took a chance. She said, I'm going to go touch his hem anyway. I'm going to go up and I'm going to touch the hem of his clothes anyway. She had some decisions to make. I think that's important. Our plans are not always the same as God's. They both had plans. Jairus was going to go down and find Jesus and get Jesus to come back to the house, lay his hands on his daughter so his daughter could live. That was his plan. That's not how it worked out. Daughter had a plan too. I'm going to go sneak into the crowd and touch the hem of his garment, and I'm going to be healed, and I'm going to sneak out and nobody's going to know the difference. Okay, that didn't work out either. They had their plans. Everybody had a set itinerary of what to do, but their plans weren't the same as God's plans. And we've got to remember that sometimes. God's plans wins. And we've got to be careful of that to think, well, I'm going to do this, 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 and this. No, maybe you won't. God may have different plans. Number three, did you notice that some personal effort was required on both cases? You know, we talk about faith and works, and you hear a lot about that. Well, you know, we're saved by grace. There's nothing you can do. That's a big, red-hot issue in the religious world. But I want you to know it took some personal effort on both parts. Jairus had to go find Jesus. So did the woman. Daughter had to go find Jesus. And they had to fight through the crowd, and they had to come up with some difficult times. Personal effort is required. Just like it is today. We're going to have to do things. God's just not going to come down and miraculously save us. We're going to have to do something. We're going to have to obey the gospel. We're going to have to live the life that we should live. We're going to have to display some fruits of the Spirit if we're truly saved. That's what the says, and you know, personal effort is required. Finally, this is my favorite one. We got to quit trying to figure out time. Did you realize that woman had that blood issue for 12 years? For every day of that 12 years, that woman was unclean ceremonially. She had no money. She didn't have any friends probably. Her family probably didn't have much to do with her. And she's just living this life. How terrible it must have been. How long do you think those 12 years seemed to that woman? Like a lifetime, right? Well, do you realize right about the time that woman had that issue of blood when she first noticed it? It was right about the time that Talitha was born. Because how old was Talitha? She's 12 years old. If you were to ask Jairus, you got 12 years with your kid. How long did that 12 years stay? Now, how long did that 12 years feel like with Talitha? Like that. Right? 12 years, that kid, it seemed like nothing. He only had his daughter for 12 years, and he's thinking, my daughter's about to die. That 12 years that Jairus had with Talitha was the same 12 years that this woman had this issue of blood. It's the same 12 years. But see, it didn't feel the same, did it? For Talitha, it was just a drop in the bucket. It was over before they knew it. But for this woman, no daughter, it seemed like an eternity for every day that she had to live on this earth. Time means nothing to God. God is eternal. We have to quit trying to figure out time. Time doesn't make sense because God is eternal. Time does not make sense. If we're sitting here thinking, I got all the time in the world to obey the gospel. I'm going to do this, 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 and this. We better not think like that because time does not mean the same to God as it does to us. When we start thinking, I know I need to live a better life, or I know I need to do this, or when this happens and this happens, then I'm going to become the better Christian that I should be. When all this time passes, now is the right time to do it. That's when I'm going to take care of things. Don't try to figure out time. Because that 12 years of Talitha and that 12 years of daughter were the exact same on stopwatch. Same amount of minutes, seconds, days, and weeks, and years, but they didn't feel the same. Don't try to figure out time. Today is the day we need to take care of things. Today is the day we need to fix things up, because that's the only day that we are guaranteed. Daughter and Talitha. Two stories intertwined. Both have a great message. I'm going to leave with one final verse in Revelation 22:2. It says, in the middle of the street, and on either side of the river was a tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. Talking about heaven, what do we have? Well, we have healing and we have life. And that's exactly what this story is about. Daughter teaches us the story of the healing of Jesus. Talitha gained life from Jesus. Isn't that a great way to write in this lesson? Daughter and Talitha. Two lessons, two seemingly different situations, but yet they're all intertwined together to teach us a lesson that Jesus produces healing and Jesus produces life. We just have to take advantage of it and don't wait on time. Don't try to figure out time. Conclude your remarks I've had for this morning. We never know the hearts and minds of those that are here. Don't waste time.